Hello, this is Fessel. Cue the jingle. Dave, I want to know, what is Fessel? Because we need to say at the top what this damn podcast is, okay?
Fessel is a Twitter account where people submit confessions and you, Rob Manuel, choose which ones are published. And this is the spin-off podcast presented by you, Rob Manuel, and me, your old friend, Dave Stevenson.
Great. And you know what we need to say right at the top of this?
Please like and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a very special episode this week, Dave. Do you know why?
Yes, we've got a special guest, psychiatrist Philippa Perry.
She writes an agony aunt column in The Guardian and has written loads of hit books.
Yes, including How to Stay Sane, The School of Life, the book you wish your parents had read and your children would be glad that you did, the book you want everyone you love, asterisk, to read, asterisk, and maybe if you don't. I think perhaps I messed that one up.
Do you know how we got a hold of her?
I imagine that you, Rob Manuel, sent her a DM and asked her if she'd like to hang out because she knows about Fessel and she likes it.
Yeah, and I just thought it'd be good because, like, you know, she's a psychiatrist and it's always made me wonder, why have I made this account? Why am I doing this? And I thought it'd be good to seek professional help to find out. And she said yes, it was really exciting. And fundamentally, it's always fundamentally exciting if someone who is a bit of a celebrity sort of like takes you seriously, indulges you and saying, yeah, I'll join in your nonsense. It's like celebrity by proxy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And plus free therapy. So, you know, win-win. I'm sitting this one out because I'm not having any of your nonsense where you DM ladies and ask them to hang out.
Fine. Well, be like that then. I'll see you on the other side of this chat. So here it is. Fessel meets Philippa Perry. Let's play more jingles.
Hello, I'm here. I'm a great fan of Fessel.
You just came across it one day and thought, oh, this is right up my street.
Not only have I come across it and followed immediately, I also bought the book for the lavatory for Christmas and, love it.
So why did Fessel strike a chord with you?
Well, it's people's secret lives, isn't it? We all have a secret life. So some of it is quite relatable. I mean, especially the one-upmanship, like when you've done a little victory and only you know about it. And I can understand the need to share that. It's the 21st century priest hole, isn't it?
It is
the confessional.
Yeah, I was always sort of hoping maybe the Pope will give me a job or something, you know. Like
I wonder if he follows you. You should check. Slide into his DMs.
I know exactly who the Pope is following. He only follows himself in other languages.
Which is
when you know you've made it.
That's a little bit egotistical.
Everything's translated and you can follow it.
Yeah. Right,
okay, so my big question, I don't know if you could find an answer to, and I'll do a little premise here, is that when the KLF burnt £1 million, they got fed up with answering, why did you do it? Because the answer they gave satisfied no one. So they toured the country showing the film, asking people, why did we do this? And I feel a little bit this way about Fessel. People come up to me and ask, why do people confess? And my answer is, well, it's a competitive sport being funny. And it's only a partial answer that covers the funniest stuff and doesn't answer the big question, why do people feel the need to confess?
I expect it's different for every person, but maybe some of it might be they quite enjoy the humiliation. I mean, humiliation is a huge turn on. And some of your confessions are so repulsive and disgusting that I imagine the humiliation is sort of quite high. So I think they may be using Fessel as a sort of maybe a little thing to wank to. Who knows?
Oh, my God.
What else is it? It's what's the point of getting one over on someone if no one knows about it? So it's to big people up. Another thing is I'm very interested in how many women confess and how many men confess, because my suspicion is it's quite a male-heavy thread, isn't it?
It's difficult to know because I genuinely have kept it anonymous. I don't have collect any information except the words people are saying.
Right.
You know, partly to help protect everyone involved in the whole project. You know?
Yeah, especially their victims.
And it's like, but what I know from like things like when I do the shows, you know, you do tick a box saying if you're a lady or a gent.
Yeah.
And it's surprisingly, there's a lot of women that come to the shows. It'll be like about 45% women at the shows. But I do agree with you with the, I'm not saying you're wrong.
Yeah, quite male, I think.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong here.
Yeah, I think they're just bringing their dates. Or actually, women do tend to go out to things more than men do. I think theatre audiences are usually women heavy.
Okay.
So that is quite a male heavy audience you got there. Stuart Lee's audiences are quite male heavy as well, I noticed when I went to one.
Yeah.
My audiences are usually 80% women, 20% men when I do a show. People always say, where are all the men?
Talking about wanking.
They are. They're just sort of, how many wanks can they do in a day? I can do more than you. So there's the competitive element.
Yeah, yeah.
So the whys, I think, are, right, one, humiliation, two, bants, three, competitiveness, four, connection, because we want to feel connected to others, and that's what we use sort of social media for. And you'd think, well, how are you getting connection if you haven't got your name on it? But when they see their confession up there and people responding to it, they no doubt feel seen and more connected.
Yeah, it is a way of getting out to a lot of people. You know, I hear people telling me that, saying that they could post stuff on their own account and it'll be seen by 20 people. And they it's a way of sort of being in public and shouting very loud to a large crowd.
Look at me!
Look at me. And then, but also hiding behind a sort of shield because no one knows it is them either.
Yeah. I mean, look at me, don't look at me. It's actually, that's quite a borderline process. If someone is sort of very conflicted about relationships, you know, one of their sayings is, I hate you, don't leave me. So maybe your contributors have this sort of borderline process of, I hate you, I want you to see me, you know.
When you say borderline, is that like borderline personality disorder?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Are you saying I've networked a lot of mentally ill people?
No.
For comedy logs?
I think you've networked a lot of people that needed to find connection and they found it through you. You've done a wonderful job.
Okay, I'm going to read you a couple of confessions that I'm curious about.
All right.
Maybe you could try a bit of advice on this one. I pride myself on being the quick-witted, laugh-a-minute centre of attention at social events. People tell me my 15-year-old son is taking after his dad. I personally find him an over-sarcastic smart-ass who has a stupid reply for everything. I've never hated myself more. That one made me cringe. Okay.
It's fun being at the centre of attention, but the person who is often a bit of a pain in the neck because they never really truly relate on a sort of human level. They're just performing the whole time. They're not interested in the to and from of, you know, ordinary dialogue, which is how we humans like to be together. Yeah, he's got two things going on. He's got, first of all, looking in the mirror that is his son because people have told him he's a mirror. And secondly, he's got silverback syndrome, which is that he was the chief gorilla and now there's the young pretender coming up, might knock him off his throne. Poor man.
I've got one more here. Today, for the first time in 27 years, I listened to the radio on an odd volume number. Nothing happened. I'm still here. Be honest. Who else always has to have the volume on an even number? Why does it get us like this? And so that's a question. And it's one that really does crop up a lot. I get a lot of submissions about people with having a problem with putting volumes on odd numbers.
It's a bit of OCD going on, isn't it? We have a world that's full of overwhelming choices. So if you can narrow down those choices with a set of rules, it might make you feel safer.
Wow.
I love it, though. I love that because he knows it's mad. And that's why he's using Fesshole to confess. He knows it's mad, but he's got a bit of a split personality going on. The sane part of him that knows it's a crazy thing to do to only put the volume on even numbers. And the OCD part of him that gets the upper hand and makes him feel safe by giving him loads of rules in life. It's quite cute, really.
The one that crops up in my life the other day, and I thought, this is a bit of an odd thing I'm doing. It was silly. It was I was in a hotel room over the weekend. The top of the deodorant bottle had rolled off the deodorant onto the floor, just the cap, you know, just a black plastic cap. And it was right by the doorstop. And I realised it was the identical size of the doorstop, and I could just push it onto the doorstop perfectly.
Beautiful.
And once it was there, I could leave it there, and no one's ever going to notice because it just looked like it was part of the doorstop. And I was like, I'm doing that.
Neat.
And I did it.
I think that's art, actually. I think that's the true bit of art. You're expressing your inner soul, and you've made a bit of art that's just for you, except it's not just for you because you've told me about it. Do you know, every time I go to a hotel room now, I'm going to have to check the doorstop to make sure it's the one that Rob put there. It'll give me such a thrill when I find it. It's like searching for the Holy Grail.
I thought it was going to be, the answer was going to be something like that I want to leave a mark in the world or something, but
That is probably it. You want to leave a tiny little mark that is you in the world. It's like carving your initials into the wall of a cave. It's a bit more imaginative than just carving your initials behind the loo, isn't it?
Anything that's behaviour that I find odd from now on in, I'm going to be, it's art. I'm doing art again.
Put it on. You're going to start a craze. It's going to be like the padlocks on the bridges all over again. It's going to drive hoteliers mad. Oh, I can't wait for this to start.
And the other one I do like that is I have badges, Fesshole badges for the show. And like, I'll often see if I can find a place in the hotel room to like leave a badge, you know, in a completely non-destructive way, like behind a picture or something like that, you know.
I'm beginning to get a picture of the Fessholer. It's something about leaving a mark. I think you're absolutely right about that. It's an anonymous mark that you know you've done, and it's there. And then when people send their confessions in, they know they've left their mark on the world. They've got a legacy now. Oh, I know what I'm thinking of. If a tree falls over in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, did it even exist? And I think that this is what Fesshole is about. We want people to hear us when we crash down in the forest so that we know we exist. It's getting very existential, this.
Wow. I love that. Okay, I've got a rude one to move on to.
Oh, goody.
I've got a lot of rude ones later down the document, I promise you, but here's a rude one. And as you said about humiliation, my boyfriend has a cuckold fantasy where he pays for me to go away for the night. I'm unfaithful and I come home the next day and I tell him about it. I've never once slept with another man and I've stayed in some lovely hotels and I'm finally using my creative writing degree.
Isn't that sweet? They're both getting what they want. She's getting a night away in a lovely hotel where she doesn't have to clean and make the bed afterwards and she can have a new fresh bathrobe. He's having a great wank fantasy that she's fueling. I mean, beautiful. Well done, those guys. I hope he reads this, though.
Oh, but then if he reads it, then it won't have broken the fantasy.
No, he'll keep it going.
I suppose my other question was like, because it's a really common thing that comes in. Like I put in a funnier one example of it, but there's so many men writing in about fundamentally kind of having their partner sleep with someone else or fantasizing about it. And it's like, what's that all about?
What is that all about? I think what it could be about is that they're actually very insecure. And by fantasizing about their partner straying, they keep control of the fact that they have no control over what their partner does. Does that make sense to you?
Maybe.
Well, when I've done work with masochists and sadists, sexual masochists and sadists, what we've tended to discover is that they were usually kind of a little bit brutalized as children. You know, they were whacked about and humiliated a lot. What they do in their sexual fantasies and in their sexual life is by sexualizing the humiliation, sexualizing the pain, they have control of it and they can make it into a thing they enjoy rather than a thing they have no control of. It's sort of a way of, you know, retaining your autonomy.
I was just trying to apply it in my own life and then thinking, you know, my dad whacking my bum when I was 8, but it hasn't led to me trying.
You haven't sexualized it in order to gain control.
No, and it just felt...
He didn't do it hard enough.
It felt disturbing to involve my memories of my father in my sex life as well.
I don't think they do that.
Yeah.
They just sexualize the feeling of humiliation. They're not putting it onto a particular person.
Yeah, because I suppose my wonder about the reading of it was that I'm still with my partner for 10 years, and how we started was really quite casual. You know, we weren't really going out, but we might, you know, a bit friends with benefits situation, yeah, kind of thing. But then the night that changed it was like she invited me to a gig, and I went to this gig, and then at the gig, some guy started obviously, trying to sort of come onto her a bit and dance with her. And then suddenly something clicks in my head and I was like, right, this, and it's like jealousy kicked in. You know, it wasn't as extreme as a cuckolding thing, but it was like, it changed our relationship.
But
the realisation in the moment, I could lose her, you know.
Yeah, that's when you realised that she was really important, when it was threatened that she might be taken away.
Yeah.
It just gave you a little bit of self-knowledge, that guy dancing with her. I wonder how much she paid him. She knew.
And whether we can get him back for our 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, that'd be a really good idea.
Right, one of the things I did was I posted up, I didn't mention your name to preempt it, but I posted up on the account that we're going to talk to a psychotherapist. One of them said, could you ask them to explain the didn't happen crowd, the people who just don't believe anything? Are they devoid of imagination? Or are they wrong in the head?
They're jealous of the brain box who knows to put a deodorant cap on a doorstop. They're just jealous that they didn't think of it. I mean, quite a lot of fesshole is about getting one up. And seeing someone else get one up with their brilliant fesshole, they might feel somehow one down. So to get one up again, they have to go, it isn't true. You know, whether your story about the deodorant cap is true or not, it doesn't matter. It's a brilliant story. It's a brilliant idea. And so somebody going, it doesn't happen, it's trying to make the confessor down so they feel up. So basically it comes from a place of deep-seated insecurity.
I found it incredible the things that people shout didn't happen at. The one I got at me personally was a few years ago. I was walking. It was in the snow, and I was walking with my then quite small son, and there was another dad with another small child, and they were mucking around the snow. And this other little child makes a little snowball, and he throws it at me, and it hits my crotch. And then the boy said to his father, "I got that man right in his penis," and I just. It was such a funny little line and moment. And obviously I typed that into Twitter and tweeted out, and I just got the didn't happen crowd. It's just like, funny things happen.
Yeah, and you're being funny, and they're not being funny, and they can't bear it, so they have to put you down. We do need a modern confessional, and here is Fesshole just for us. And I do think they're real, because real things are funnier than made-up things, and your thread is extremely funny, which is why I follow it.
Yeah, I've always found real life funnier than made-up jokes. I mean, not I don't might like made-up jokes, but just the knowledge that something has happened gives a sort of gravity to a humorous situation, that someone's pun is just floating in the air.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Have you noticed some themes in the confessions? I could mention a couple of themes.
Send me some themes. Let's have a listen.
Okay. I'm not gay, but, also written as, I'm 100% straight, but.
I don't think anyone is 100% anything. You know, 99% perhaps, you know, but there's a little bit of insecurity about people's manhood if they have to preface whatever they're saying with, I'm not gay, but. It's like, I'm not a racist, but. You know, we're all a little bit racist, mate. It's the way we've been brought up. The great thing is to be aware of it, and therefore you don't act on your racism. What these people are not aware of the homophobic tendency. I mean, that either they're not aware of their homophobia, and nor are they aware of their homosexual tendencies.
Yeah, I sort of read it as like they're going, I'm recognising I've had like a gay thought or a gay experience, but I'm aware that society can be very homophobic. So I want to talk about the experience without being labelled as
gay.
Or say, yeah.
Yeah, homophobia is alive and well, I think we can take from that.
Yeah, yeah, and internalised in this case.
Yeah.
There's been people saying that there's a lot of material that gets published which is fundamentally along the lines of people probably hating their partner. Do you feel that?
Well, I don't know if they hate their partner or not, but relationships can descend into winning and losing. I've actually written a book about this. It's called The Book You Want Everyone You Love to Read. We mistake winning for relating. They might enjoy the game, but I would have thought in the long term it gets very tired. Instead of allowing yourself to be vulnerable in a relationship, it's about trying to get one up in the relationship. It's about one-upmanship. I always say to couples when they're arguing about something, you know, don't try and win. Try and get mutual understanding, because that will get you unstuck and go further. But, you know, these are very advanced ideas and most of us are still stuck on trying to get one up.
Okay. One of the phrases that crops up is for reasons I still can't explain. And so I'll give you an example. At a 12th birthday party, me and another mate went into the loft of this lad's house above his parents' bedroom. For reasons I still can't explain, I decided to urinate all over the loft in unison, soaked the insulation, Jesus the stench. We're back to leaving a mark, but it's this kind of like vandalism-y kind of leaving a mark, isn't it, maybe? Or...
This is two 12-year-old boys on the edge of puberty, egging each other on. Emissions from the penis is the... one of the biggest sort of mark levers, isn't it? It's a little bit like, for reasons I can't explain, if I ask my cat why he's spraying the fence, he probably doesn't, I don't know why I do this. But the zoologist will tell us that he's leaving his mark on the fence so that other cats don't come near. And maybe there was a little bit of leaving a mark up in that attic with that disgusting urination of those naughty boys.
Naughty, smelly little pre-teenage boys.
Well, but just on the cusp of having a different sort of emission from that penis, weren't they? They were practicing ejaculation.
Practicing being big cats in the jungle.
Beautifully put, Rob.
Thank you. Okay, for reasons I still can't explain, I once started saving all my shits in a bin bag with the aim to accumulate my own weight in shit. It was more horrific than you can imagine. Getting rid of it after I came to my senses is something that I'll have to live with. Sorry, I can't even say about laughing. Getting rid of it after I came to my senses is something that I will have to live with forever.
My own weight in shit. Wow.
That's the sentence you didn't know you were going to say.
Here we have a true artist. There was an artist called Mark Quinn who he bloodlet enough blood of his own blood to make a frozen head. So he made his head in blood. I think this is just a filthy version of that. In fact, maybe it is Mark. Mark, was it you? Maybe it was. I mean, it is quite artistic, my own weight in shit. I mean, what is that saying? Is that saying I'm a load of shit or I'm not a load of shit? This is what a load of shit looks like. Again, it's quite arty and disgusting, and I'm actually quite impressed.
I love that you take that it's art, because my worry is it's just mental illness, that he was trapped in his... You know, I lived in a student house, you know, obviously when I was a student, and then there was a later student house I wasn't part of, but this guy was a part of, and I was still in contact with those people, so I was aware of this happening. And basically, this guy who was a very... at the time when I knew him, was like quite this handsome together. He was the one who had all the girlfriends when we were just like little nerds. And then in the second year of university, he just stopped leaving his room and was like filling bottles with pee inside his bedroom. But also kind of like making jokes about it, going, woohoo, bottles of piss kind of thing. And it was a bit odd.
It is a bit odd, isn't it? And yet I've heard that story a lot. You know, different people doing it. So it is a thing that men, I think it's because they can. Like, if I had to aim into a bottle, we'd have a hell of a mess. But you can make quite a neat job of it, can't you?
Could you do a vase?
Yeah, I could do it. I could manage a vase. And actually, let me just show you. I have quite a lot of vases.
Let me show you all my vases
I've got up there. I've got a lot of vases on the shelf there. So, you know, actually, you're giving me ideas now.
Yeah, you might need to put a bit of support on that shelf if you want to fill them full of urine and shit. Someone says that they liked the one about the couple who didn't have a fixed side of the bed they slept on.
Is crazy. What's going on?
Yeah, that was exactly the reaction. Universal incredulity ensued, not sure of the significance to psychology.
Oh, my God. Not only do we have a side of the bed that we sleep on, we've got a side of the sofa we sit on.
Yes.
We've got a side of the table we sit at.
Yes, and then absolutely.
The other day, I thought I'd be crazy, right? Sat on his side of the sofa. He sat on my side of the sofa. It was so uncomfortable.
Everything was wrong.
Yeah. So uncomfortable. We couldn't pretend to be that crazy any longer. And we just swapped, thought, let's never do that again and let's never speak of this again. It was a terrible idea. You just get comfortable in your body in one way. You know how autistic people like everything to be the same every day and follow a set of rules so they know where they are and they know what they're doing? I think we've all got a bit of that. I think it's on a sliding scale.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
couple that swap sides, how they sleep on the bed, I mean, those guys are crazy, okay? I mean, they're wild. God knows what their lives are like. I mean, I'd have to have a whole new room and a whole new bed if somebody didn't want to sleep on the left-hand side, because the right-hand side is mine, okay?
I'm trying to remember what side I'm on. I know what side I'm on, but
are you on the door side
right.
or the not door side?
I'm on the not door side.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I am being protected by my lady friend?
No, it means she gets up for the kids in the night.
Right, okay. Yeah, it could be that, yeah. Yeah, no, it wouldn't ever happen with swapping sides. We have occasionally swapped on the sofa. I know that's happened a bit recently and it's felt a bit
off. How does it feel?
It feels off. It feels off, but it has cropped up. And I will order the kids out. I've got my special spot on the sofa, and it's also, you know, I've got a little few things, a little set up, like there's a little charger point set up there and things like that, yeah.
Charger points. You've got your own charger points. You've got your preferred
got a little
zapper.
Shelf for my tea, yeah.
Actually, I haven't actually sorted that out. My coffee table's too low. I'm looking for one that's a bit higher, that just gets my tea right. I've got it wrong at the moment. My life isn't perfect.
Do you want to do some sex confessions and react to these?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me.
I picked out some rude ones.
I thought you were going to ask me, do you want to do some sex? She said flirtingly.
We'll see how we get on with this conversation.
All right, then. Okay, maybe. Let's have some sex confessions.
Okay. Okay. I met a girl in a bar in Dublin, went outside in the alley to get it on. She thought it was hot, so I wasn't wearing any underwear. I didn't have the heart to tell her I discarded my pants when I shat on them in a farting competition 30 minutes previously.
Yeah, I think that's best kept to himself. I mean, no, tell us, that's great, but I'm glad he didn't tell her.
For 10 years, my husband has wanted me to poo on him in bed. I've always said no because I think it's disgusting. About 2 weeks ago, I gave in and I did it. It was completely disgusting. He looked repulsed. He barely touched it. And neither of us has mentioned it since.
I think sometimes things are so much better in fantasy than in reality, aren't they? I think he should get a glass coffee table. They'll have so much fun with that.
Oh, that's I'm asking for advice on how to do this myself. I don't but yeah, that suddenly made sense of that, isn't it? Because that's how people could play with poo without it getting all sticky and all over their hands and horrible. Yeah,
I mean, it's a humiliation game, shit on me.
Yeah.
But it was one that worked better in his fantasy than in reality. And I feel very sorry for both of them and impressed that they actually had a go. Not all experiments work.
It's good to try occasionally, I guess.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe. It was just the barely touched it. Like, what she was expecting?
I mean, if they want to be really radical, they should maybe swap sides in the bed and forget about the poo stuff.
Standing naked in the bathroom, about to get in the shower. These are a bit of a theme. This is all Anyway, standing naked in the bathroom, about to get in the shower, I had a fart brewing in front of my wife. To put on a show, I squatted to let it out in all its glory, and I shat on the bath mat. 5 years later, I'm getting divorced. I can't help but feel this incident may have caused it.
No, mate. It's been an accumulation of terrible incidents. That was not the cause. It won't have helped, but it wasn't the cause. We don't divorce somebody for one thing unless it's adultery.
Yeah.
And then we might. It's not the ultimate betrayal, shitting on the bath mat. It's just not very nice. But I expect it was the adultery that really tipped her over the edge. She might have thought she's welcome to him because of the bath mat incident. Stick to the pull my finger and then fart. The squatting position is just too dangerous.
I heard my neighbour moaning one morning and I had a wank listening to it. I found out later she was out and it was a pigeon.
Sorry, I'm doing something that doesn't really work very well for podcasts.
You're doing some excellent faces.
Which was excellent faces. That is the sweetest thing I've ever heard. And I hope it hasn't ruined pigeons for him forever. It's
cute. Can you do a pigeon noise?
Cuckoo. That's not moaning, is it? How can you? Cuckoo. That's not my sex noise.
Maybe you could try it, incorporate it into your love life and see how it goes.
No, I'll stick to how much longer?
EastEnders is on in a bit.
Yeah. Don't want to miss.
Can we get some chips?
Yeah.
Right, where's one? This is just silly, this one. After sex, I place a single tissue over my knob to make it look like a little ghost. I shout, "Woo!" at my girlfriend and twitch it about. She says she's going to leave me if I do it again. I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, I think he finds the deep sense of connection and love he has for his girlfriend a little overwhelming and he can't really cope for it. So he has to trivialise it in this little ghost scenario. And I'm with her. I'm going to leave.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. It's really boring to sort of like, look, we've just had sex and now I'm going to be really funny about it rather than say something like, that was nice, or should we have a cup of tea, or has anybody got a light? No. He wants to make funny little ghost things with his willy. Once, and if it doesn't work, it's forgivable, but she's not finding it funny and he's still doing it.
Yeah, okay, that is the crime, isn't it? Yeah. Because I was looking at it thinking, doing a bit of crap physical comedy is the kind of thing I might do, but I wouldn't keep doing it if it was going down bad.
It's sort of like, I'm amusing myself. I'm making you into a bystander and you're an unwilling bystander. I mean, it's not fun. Stop it. Daft bugger. That was the psychological insight you were hoping to get from this, wasn't it? Things like daft bugger.
I don't know. I mean, I genuinely found that an interesting response because it wasn't what my mom was.
What was yours?
I think I said it, which was that I zeroed in on just the comedy of like mucking around.
Yeah.
And I didn't like think about the bit about
the repetition.
I'm going to do it again.
The repetition.
I mean, in terms of a comedy story, the repetition makes it funny,
yeah,
because it's just like keeping with the joke. But
yeah.
But in terms of obviously real behaviour, you have changed my mind on it. Yeah, like hammering a joke at someone when they're not finding it funny is obviously bullying.
And
yeah.
You know, I think it's quite a French thing to do, not to take sex seriously. But actually, taking sex seriously is a lot more fun than making it into comedy hour. Really, I'll just leave that there.
Yeah. This is. Everything I do is wrong.
Well, you know, whatever works for you, if it works for you and your partner to have sex as comedy are, then I'm all wrong. But, you know.
Okay. One that's just, I'm going to preempt it, but I'll just say it instead. Probably the lowest point of the early years of my divorce was me in the kitchen at 11 p.m. drinking whiskey, some meatballs cooking in the deep fat fryer, having a wank straight into the kitchen bin.
It's a beautiful picture. Make a wonderful painting. Whiskey, deep fried meatballs, wanking into the bin. A little bit of humiliation going there. I mean, what is the worst thing you could have sex with? I think the kitchen bin. That's probably it.
That's it.
I hope your life improved, my friend. And thank you for telling us your rock bottom. I think it could be worse, but, you know, at least you could.
He's still got a kitchen. He's still got a bin. You know, you
he's
can lose
got
that.
Food. He's
yeah,
doing well.
Yeah. He's got whiskey. He's got booze. It's right.
Yeah, he's great. And he's not impotent. It's all going very, very well. Well done, my friend. Home
best. Home. Right. I'm going to have to just read us something from the producers messaging me. And he's saying, this has been brilliant so far.
So we far. Don't need... Right.
It was not a neg. It was not a neg. Basically, I wrote a big list of things to do.
Yeah.
And then the producer wrote a list of things. And I said, I'll bung them at the end. And now he's saying, we don't need all my bits at the end.
Oh,
but
yeah, let's have them. I'm enjoying myself.
Okay, yeah. Bonus producer questions. Are you confessional? Imagine if you had the Fess Hall form in front of you, what would you write?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't do anything disgusting. I don't cheat at cards.
Good.
No, I haven't got anything to confess. I'm very sorry. That's really boring. I should have thought of one. That is my confession. Should have thought of one. I should have got one from my husband because I'm sure he's got some disgusting ones.
And he's made like art about sort of like, was it 37 wanks or something?
He makes no secret of his wanking.
He's made it part of his work.
Yeah, 37
He's made
wanks.
Ceramic penises.
A lot of people remember the cathedrals when they're going across Spain on a cycling holiday. No, he remembers his wanks. Different view for everyone. Wonderful. I think that's marvellous. He does confessions on pots. Great.
He writes his own confessions on a pot.
Well, he wrote that one on a pot, but I don't think he even saw it as a confession because he knows that everybody wanks.
Yeah, yeah. In your line of work, confessions must come thick and fast. The big difference is that people are confessing to your face. With Fess Hall, it's to a Google form. In terms of the type of confessions Eva elicits, what do you think could be the big differences?
Well, that's a very interesting question. A friend of mine, a colleague, is a psychotherapist, and she is completely visually impaired, or as we used to call it, blind. She cannot see. She gets a lot of clients who are glad she can't see them because they don't want to be looked at or seen when they're telling her things. So they feel it's less shaming. Freud had people lying on a bed and he sat behind them in a chair. And I think that was possibly for the same thing, so that you could say anything about sexual fantasies or confessions or whatever. And not have eye contact. I think people, when they come to psychotherapy, more often feel foolish for having a thought because they've never heard anyone express the same thought. They express it, and I probably say that's quite understandable because X, Y, Z, and then they don't feel freaks anymore. It's not the fun of Fess Hall because Fess Hall always has a sort of strong element of comedy. I don't know if that's because you curate so well.
I mean, I kind of run funny projects is what I do. Yeah. And so I publish the funnier ones.
Yeah.
Plus a few that might not be funny, but just interesting, you know?
So I don't really think of the process of psychotherapy being a confessional, really. It's more of an unfolding of the psyche. So they find out more about themselves and make the unconscious more conscious rather than confession.
Shall I just pull some out from the account that are on the account now, if you want to react to some of these.
Yeah, great. I'm loving it.
Okay, I'll just get into some ones that are on the account now. The Conservative Party sent me a questionnaire in the post. I filled the prepaid return envelope with enough strips of newspaper to push it over the 100-gram max for a standard letter, so they'll have to pay the excess. I admit this is monumentally petty.
Yeah, well, I hope you enjoyed it. Whether they actually bothered to pay for it, I doubt. But, you know, nice work if it made you feel good. Any act of revenge for what they've done to this country, we should applaud, really. Well done.
Yeah, I think this one's quite common because I've done it myself. I haven't stuffed the envelope, but through the front door came like this message from Rishi Sunak, a survey from the Conservative Party. And I didn't fill it in or put anything rude in it. I did put the envelope back in the post, the prepaid envelope inside, because what I know from direct marketing stuff is that they will have to pay that charge, and so it will cost them £1 or something.
Well done. Good work. Yeah.
It's every a small, little small helps. Gesture. Yeah. It's a small gesture, but I felt good going to the local post box and shoving it in.
Well done. Shove it in.
Thank you. Shove it in. Okay, I'll pull one out here.
Ooh.
Oh, dear. I'm trying to find one to read. My husband is a lot older than me. Before we met, I had a drunken one-night stand with a guy who turned out to be his son. Neither of us have let on that we remember anything, and we've opted for distant civility. Just to say to the readers that your mouth wide open in comic shock.
Write a novel, mate. This has got to have an ending, as it were. Maybe the son has actually forgotten because he never really took in her face. Let's hope that's what's happened, shall we?
Yeah, it's a possibility, isn't it?
It is a possibility. Or maybe she's mistaken. You know, all young boys look the same. Maybe she's mistaken him for somebody else. Or maybe it actually happened and they're in this horrific, awkward, terrible every 25th of December. I bet she can't wait for the whole thing over and she makes lots of jokes about stuffing.
It is. I don't know who would write it. It's a Mike Lee play or something. It's where just the
appalling.
Awkwardness of it
it's
all.
Appalling. Yeah, but I just don't know how that's going to unfold.
It is a frustration of this account. You get this snippet of a story and then you don't get any more of it sometimes.
Yeah, I find that too with I've got an agony column in The Observer. They ask me for advice. I give advice. And sometimes they write back and tell me what happened, which is always great. But often I'm just left wondering.
I get a few people who do write in and say, oh, this is how it went. But also because the thing is genuinely anonymous, I don't know if that's someone being creative, you know,
because
people could be lying about who they are for a second one, you know.
Yeah, they might.
They might. I met a woman one night out when I was at university. We got together and we had great sex that night. The next morning I was plotting my escape when, bam, she caught me in a Dutch oven. We've been married 16 years now and we can't tell anyone the real reason I knew she was the one.
What's a Dutch oven?
It's when you have a duvet and you fart under the duvet and someone else is under the duvet and so the stink is right.
I didn't know that. I've
read all those kind of websites like Urban Dictionary, so I know these things.
Oh, God. Well, of course you'd have to understand everything that comes in. So he was planning his escape and then he did a Dutch oven.
It's like the penis under the ghost thing where... Yeah. Oh, she put the duvet over him, farted, and he was like, okay, that's quite funny. I like
it. Oh,
you.
I see. It was her that I've got it now.
Yeah, yeah.
So he
I've
got to make my mistake. And she said, I'm going to drown you in my farts, and did so. And he thought, she's going to be a great person to play one upmanship with for the rest of my life and, you know, a bit of a challenge. And so they lived happily ever after. Wonderful basis for a relationship.
So that's sort of like interesting. It's sort of like the earlier bit was sort of like you were saying how one upmanship can be a problem in a relationship because wanting to win.
It's a game. So it's a game that can keep you involved. I mean, it's not a game I particularly would want to play myself very often. I'm not saying I never do. But it you
given
know.
Given how far your partner might go, given his art.
Yeah, I think he might win. That's the trouble. So it's a game I don't think it's a very good idea to play because he would beat me at
it. Pick your games carefully, yeah.
It's a game. So, yes, it's a game that can keep you involved and it's a way of connecting. So it's not all bad. It's probably better than not speaking. It's just like, could be more deep and meaningful, couldn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, it's the path taken, not taken. And that's where it pushed them onto the one path.
You know.
And I believe in this lovely couple and they had many more meaningful moments.
I believe in them too. And I think they're having a lovely time in life because a shared sense of humour is very important.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's been an absolute joy and a pleasure that you enjoy it, that you had so much to say and we all heard it. It was fantastic.
Great.
Thank you, Philippa.
All right. Over and out then.
Bloody hell, I thought that was great. What did you think, Dave?
That was really good. I thought you and her got on really well, actually.
Yeah, I was like she was a bit flirty with me, wasn't she? What did I imagine that? It was in my head.
Who doesn't flirt with you, Rob?
She definitely suggested at some point that we have sex. I didn't imagine that.
That's very true. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I think that she's, I mean, obviously you both seem very comfortable talking to each other, and I guess that's also a professional skill, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not my skill. That was like her. She brought the skill in. You know, it's like being the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers dancing partner, and like apparently Fred Astaire could dance with a mop and make the mop look like a good dancer. And that's what she did for me. I'm definitely making myself the mop.
I was going to say, the Ginger Rogers thing, she could dance with a mop and make it look like it was dancing, but also she could do it backwards in heels. Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting, that sort of question about the KLF going on tour and asking why they're doing it. And you're sort of taking Fesshole on tour and asking kind of why you're doing it. But also I thought that that came out as well in some of the stories where people are going, for reasons that I just can't explain, I found myself pissing over a loft with my best friend. And it's like, yeah, the people are also doing that for that reason as well. It's like, I don't actually know why I did this. If I tell you, maybe you'll go, well, of course, everyone does that.
Yeah, when the KLF took it on tour, they didn't actually get any good answers about why they're doing it. They just got a lot of people angry that they burnt a lot of money, which seems to be the reception I get out when I try and go on tour. People are just angry at me. Why is this on stage? This is terrible. But to get it back on message, one of the things that really sort of like excited me was like, because it was back to that, like, not understanding our impulses. And I was talking about how I put the top of a deodorant thing on a doorstop in a hotel. And she was just like, that's art. You know, and it was just her reaction that it was art. It was sort of like it sent off endorphins in my brain and going, these are the words I need to hear. Having someone tell me that my strange impulses aren't just nonsense and they're art is really good. And it will probably lead me down to a path that it will be no good for anyone else. But it made me maybe understand a little bit her marriage, potentially, that she just, whenever Grayson was like, had one of his impulses, she was, that's art. And that's why they've stayed together, because he's like, yes, yes, it is art. Brilliant, I can do it. It's like she gives permission to your weirdest impulses and says they're good. And that's an incredible thing to offer the world.
It is lovely, isn't it? I was actually going to joke and say, have it as a little sound sting on your phone. You can just play whenever you just need a bit of affirmation.
Yeah.
But it is lovely.
And I just enjoyed it as well, just her reaction, just her laughing at so much of it and not being judgmental. You know, there's so many judgmental people in the damn replies on this account. And like, she really was like, let it all hang out. It's all amazing. Some of it's awful, but let it all out. It's all great. And
she had the opinion, but she wasn't trying to shut anything down, was she? That was the...
No, it wasn't like, this is bad, this is wrong, which so much of the internet is that sort of angry school mom kind of thing of like... telling you off from stuff.
Scolding, yeah.
The scold internet, yeah.
I just thought there was an interesting thing about people making their mark on the world. And, you know, if you're a tree in the forest and you fall, who's there to notice? But it just reminded me of a thing I read about Vietnam, where it was about tracking people in the jungle. There's a habit that people have called leaf doodling, which is when you're sort of mucking about in the jungle and you sort of fold the leaves up and you make patterns with the leaves as you're sitting around, because you can't help but want to leave a mark in the world. And that's how people can find you in the jungle and shoot you. But it's such a human impulse.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally. Since I was a kid, you walk down the street, you pick up a leaf, a tree, and roll it between your fingers and imagine it's a little caterpillar, all sorts.
And the other thing that I thought was nice was I like that story about the lady when the cuckold husband, where she didn't actually do it. And
oh, yeah, she was just like, oh, don't they both have a great marriage and they get something out of it, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she basically should be doing this podcast. Like, if we knock us off, or maybe what we could do is we could alternate you and me talking to Philippa Perry with her just saying nice things about everyone.
Just go, that's art. And we're like, yeah.
Right, to wrap up, we need to tell people to like and subscribe wherever they get their podcasts. Can you do that, Dave?
Please like and subscribe wherever they get their podcasts, or you.
And because Fesshole isn't just good times talking to Philippa Perry, we'll leave you with one last confession as a palate cleanser. Can you read it, Dave?
Put camera up at home to see what the dog does while I'm working. Wife clearly forgot about it. I took a gander one day and she was video chatting with a bloke who was remotely controlling the vibrator inside her. Divorced now. Only wanted to see the dog do something funny.
Bye!
Bye-bye!